you get your news? Well, aside from listening to WBUR, if you're like most people, it's digitally. According to data from the Pew Research Center, 8 in 10 Americans say they often or sometimes read their headlines on a smartphone or a computer. And part of that is through emailed newsletters. Now, the newsletters of a decade ago are different from the newsletters of today. And here at WBUR, there's one for pretty much every interest or knowledge need. For today's From the Newsroom, we sat down recently with two generators of this WBUR news machine. Megan McGinnis, assistant managing editor for newsletters, and Nick DaCosta-Clippa, newsletter editor. And I started by asking Megan, what makes these newsletters unique?
Newsletters have been around for a while in the sense that email has been around for a while. So it's not quite as flashy as some of maybe the other social media platforms, but it is a personal space. You get emails from your boss and your mom, and you kind of get to curate exactly what you want in there for the most part, minus those like spam emails from all of the clothing stores we may or may not shop at. But I think that it allows us to be a little bit more informal and have a little bit more fun with it than maybe some of our other platforms can.
It is interesting to me, Nick, because if we look back over the digital history of, let's say, the last 20 years, most things that were in at one point just aren't anymore. And I think many would have declared the death of email 700 times over. And yes, it turns out that getting a newsletter of the key news via email is kind of smoking hot right now, which really surprises me.
Yeah, it's kind of been the medium that has endured for the last two decades. When we look at, like, I feel like there's a new social media platform every year or two. I think it's a great spot where, I mean, if you're checking your email from your work or from anyone else, you can just, you have your news in there too. And I think we look at, like, for WBR today, our weekday newsletter, to be a spot where you can really, you get all the news that you really like need to know in the morning and what you'd hear on newscast.
So Nick, we'll stay with you as our newsletter editor. You produce WBUR Today. What goes into a standard WBUR Today? Give us a rundown on one you did recently.
Yeah, so earlier this week, I think a good example of this is we produced a newsletter focusing on what's next for Maura Healey's tax relief proposal, which I think was the sort of the big news that kicked off on Monday. And so for Tuesday's newsletter, we're working on, okay, so like the proposal's out, what comes next? What's the process? And then provide context too about like how are groups reacting to this? How are progressive groups reacting to it? How's the business community reacting to it? And how are the leaders in the state house, where like the fate of this proposal ultimately lies, what do they think of it? And I think the overall theme of the newsletter is sort of like in the morning, people need to know and want to know what is going to happen that day. And it's kind of like a look ahead each day. And I mean, sometimes that look ahead is like right to your morning, whether or not it's like disruptions on the T or traffic or snow. And then other days, it's more of a longer look ahead, whether it's an election or sort of a legislative process that maybe isn't going to have an effect immediately, but it's going to have big impacts on people's lives down the road.
And Megan McGinnis, you know, you're the assistant managing editor for newsletters. There are a bunch of them. You launched, well, I should say you relaunched a newsletter this week, the Pick Me Up, which feels like it's specifically designed to warm our hearts again a little bit. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have 10 newsletters actually at the station, and all of them try to have some sort of like joyful moment or kind of diversion from the news, whether that's like a little joke in WBUR Today for Before You Go is what that section is called. And we're finding, especially in recent years with the news cycle being just as intense as it was, that maybe not everyone wanted hard news in their inbox, but they did want to have something that made them smile and something that was just restored their faith in humanity. And whether that was a local story, whether that was a photo, whether that was a video that was kind of going viral on social media, it was really fun to write when I first launched it. Then we have our big newsletter team now, and Hannah Ali is our brand new associate producer for newsletters, and she'll be the voice of that. And she's already just like capturing all of the great stories.
Give us an example.
So on Monday, she actually wrote about a Newton native named Ira Seskin, who is 71, and he works at, or he volunteers at the Mount Washington Observatory. And he's been doing it since 1990, and he just loves the cold. And the story was a Boston.com story originally that she found and shared. And it just goes into how much he loves volunteering there and why he was so upset the other week when the wind chill was so intense that he could not go outside then, and telling about his life. And I just read it, and it just made me happy. And I think that's perfectly captures exactly what that newsletter's trying to be.
It also makes you understand your community better.
Exactly. I think that as a public radio station, that kind of connection to each other and our communities and humanity is like a key element of where, yes, we're all journalists, but we're also all your neighbors. And I think that one thing with email in particular, especially during the pandemic, was that it allows you to curate your inbox in a way that if you sign up for like a hard news newsletter, you get to decide when you open that and when you read it. So if you're like not in the mental space for that today, then you just wait till you're ready for it. And I think the pick-me-up is like a nice little answer to that of like, I want to feel informed and know about stories in my community. But right now, I only want this, or I want to be able to forward these stories to my mom. And that is great. And the goal is that we have a newsletter for everyone, depending on what your interests are and what you're able to kind of handle.
So, Nick, you know, the WBUR today, one of the things that struck me in you talking about preparing one is we do reporting from our journalists, from reports and stories from around Greater Boston, from even our competitors sometimes when we need to bring news forward. But often there's extra work that you need to do to provide that next layer of understanding, that next layer of content for the listener, the so what of the story. And I wonder, over the last couple of months, where have you had to work the hardest? Like, the news is so intricate, or the stories are so complex and dense. And I'm thinking about, you know, what you did when you were looking at, do we need to raise the minimum wage again? We just got to $15 an hour, and already we know that's not enough. What are a couple of the stories where there's just a lot you have to dig into in order to be able to bring it forward in an understandable way?
As you're saying that, I'm thinking about, like, there's so many stories where you hear it in the news reads that are very short little clips at the beginning of shows, and how, like, sometimes those, when you put it in a newsletter, you're like, wait, we need to give people, like, kind of the what's next, what the so what, as you said, and kind of a lot of there's so much nuance that you have to kind of capture and then hopefully give people.
So I want to do story time with Nick now, because one of the things that really fascinates me in the way you do these newsletters, mostly newsletters, we expect them to be, okay, here's the news, we just gathered it all in one place. But there's this level of follow-up, and sometimes like bloodhounding stories that you've been watching that have been popping up in newsletters for a while. And I understand you've got one from the Green Line Extension where you really were bloodhounding it and actually caught something as a result that everyone else might have missed.
Yeah, so there's this path that runs along the Green Line Extension that is sort of the last missing component of this big project that's been decades in the making. And when they complete it, it'll link dozens of bike paths that will go from Bedford to along the Charles River out to Waltham. But I've been working on trying to like pin down when it will open. The local like T and Somerville officials have finally said that it'll open in spring, but I was going a little bit deeper and watching some of these small community meetings just for the residents that live in the area, and found out that there, even when it does open, there's going to be basically a stretch that's still going to remain closed for another, I think they said at least a year.
So it's open, but not really open.
Yeah, it'll be 80% open.
Do you happen to remember off the top of your head, which is this little section?
It's by Somerville High School. It's by the new T-stop that's there is the Gilman Square T-stop, which is, I think, it's in between East Somerville and maybe you'd say the middle of Somerville.
So Megan McGinnis, here we are now, right? We've got 10 different newsletters, all these different corners of the world, everything from pick-me-ups to, by the way, thank God, you know, Nick watches small community meetings so that you don't have to, because it turns out we can catch this little piece of news on the Green Line Extension that might matter to you on your bicycle this summer. What do you have planned next?
Well, the pick-me-up is happening for the month of March. So for people who want something that is new and can make you smile, right now is the time to sign up for that. For the summer, we are bringing back a newsletter that we kind of pilot test run almost last summer called Beach Books. Mm-hmm. And that will be Memorial Day through Labor Day once a week. And we all just love books. And I feel like anytime we ask any of our readers to tell us what they're reading, that's where we get the most responses. People just want to talk about it and tell us why they like it. And I think sometimes NPR book lists can get a bad rep for kind of being a little pretentious in the
little heady.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you just want a good plot-driven fiction book to kick back on your porch or on the beach or whatever. And that can still mean that it is really well-written literature. And that's what we're trying to bring here. So we have two of our reporters who are going to be taking that on. And each week they will recommend at least one book, maybe two, that will have some tie to New England. It could be loose, but it will be some tie. And we really are trying to also just give some priority focus to authors of color in the area as well. So I'm really excited, and they're much more in tune with book talk and Bookstagram than I am. So they'll highlight some things that are trending across the internet and in Q&As with authors, and it's just super fun.
Excellent. And where can people sign up for all of this?
WBUR.org/newsletters will give you the list of all of our newsletters. So you can sign up for Nick's Morning. If you want just once a week, The Weekender is a good take for you. Cooked is an awesome one about sustainable eating. So we really have something for everyone, at least in my very biased opinion.
That was Megan McGinnis, Assistant Managing Editor for Newsletters, and Nick DaCosta-Clippa, Newsletter Editor, both at WBUR, from the newsroom. Our newsletter, WBUR Today, just featured a story by arts and culture reporter Chris de la Guerra. On February 19th, the Lizard Lounge in Cambridge celebrated 25 years of Sunday night poetry jams, along with the man who started them. And Chris de la was there.
Everybody say smooth.
Smooth!
Turn to the person next to you and say, you look good. Turn to the person behind you and say, you look beautiful.
Here, music mingles with words that hang in the air of this dark basement like a haze. There's a bar in one corner, soft carpet underfoot. This evening's host, Harlem 125, sets the mood for the evening and the poetry to come.
I can see you through the prism of my life, colored, overlapped, conceptual, magnified.
On the mic is Trish Janice. On the sax is Jeff Robinson. She finishes her poem and quickly notes that she has another, a tribute.
I have known and loved and adored this man for 25 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That is something very special and very magical.
To understand the legacy of Jeff Robinson and his trio, you have to ask the poets, because he's pretty humble, a jazz musician who doesn't like to talk about himself. He founded this poetry jam in 1998. To perform. He became a host, a slam master for competition, the person setting up chairs and testing sound equipment. So for one night, poets like Yoka Okoawo dedicated their words to him.
This is 25 years dissertation in the making, underground style. Yeah. Berklee College of Music needs to give this man a doctorate.
If you ask Robinson, creating the poetry jam is a journey. One that started after he arrived in Boston from St. Louis to study music at Berklee. He discovered the way poetry and music make something new.
I'm not a poet, but I do love playing music with poets. It's been an eye-opener, and it's changed my music dramatically.
How much time can I slow down to enjoy this flow with you? And how slow can we go? Musicians play with time, and I'm letting my heart sing me.
Robinson's sax sounds like a bee buzzing just under Margot Malia's poem.
I expected I'm moving matter with defying time and space. I become no one.
Poets come in and out all evening, taking a break outside. I catch a moment with Jeannie Nunes, who won the slam that evening. Born and raised in Roxbury, she's been driving across the bridge to Cambridge to attend poetry nights for 22 years.
Like, we all do it out of love, you know. The majority of the poets you heard tonight are all well in their 40s, you know, some of us hitting 50, you know, grown kids, some of even grandparents on that mic. But when you get on that mic, on that stage anyway, we defy age, we defy any other thing, any barrier. It's just like, it's church.
This night draws all kinds. Fresh faces arrive nervous, but ready to share poems about love or their pet who just passed away. Legends of the poetry community, like Reggie Gibson.
A man took his hands and began to clap, and that was the beginning of a boom, boom, pow. Let's take it back to the dawn of time.
There was something that was in the space tonight because of the people who were there that is beyond my experience to be able to name, which for me as a poet is what creates poetry, you know? Because if you can name it, then you just write prose. If you can't name it, you write poetry.
That indescribable feeling is what keeps people coming back. And though Robinson is stepping away from the Poetry Jam, the mic will still be there on Sundays. Poet and frequent host Cole Rodriguez made a promise that night to continue Robinson's legacy of uplifting artists. She also can't wait to hear what he does next.
I look forward to you telling me stories about what you do on the weekend now that you don't gotta come here every week. I look forward to when you show up with a poem of your own.
At the end of the night, Robinson takes to the mic, thanking those in the room and giving some parting words in the best way he knows how.
This is what I want to leave y'all with.
That was WBUR arts and culture reporter Cris de la Guerra. You can find that story and more at WBUR.org. And you can sign up for newsletters at WBUR.org/newsletters.